A couple of minutes after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Time now for Talking Animals, KUCI.
Pack up all my care and woe, here I go, singing low, bye, bye. Blackbird, where somebody waits for me, sugar sweet, so is he. Bye, bye, Blackbird. No one here can love and understand me. Oh, what hard luck stories they all hand me. Make my bed and light the light. I'll arrive late tonight. Blackbird, too-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Here I go singing low, bye, Blackbird. Where somebody waits for me, sugar sweet, and so is he. Bye, Blackbird. Heart love
All right, music there from Carmen McRae. That's her version. Bye Bye Blackbird, as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine and streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, I hasten to add, of the Anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that's devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love, love, love to get calls here Talking Animals. You can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals. Other less immediate ways to be in touch, including emailing us, talkinganimals@AOL.com, and checking out our website. Email us via that as well. By way of that, talkinganimals.net. Again, make no mistake, that's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another stirring session of the Serena Sharp Show. Again, who doesn't love alliteration? Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. We're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every single show, every show up through last week, for sure, that we've ever broadcast, is archived on talkinganimals.net. So if you check that out, you can see that clearly the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today our guest is Terry Wolf, Wildlife Director of Lion Country Safari in West Palm Beach, Florida, who will address how sensitive elephants and other animals are to changes in weather pressure prior to natural disasters, using sort of drawing from those experiences with animals during the spate of recent Florida hurricanes to comment on how so few animals, really, were killed or injured in the wake of the tsunami in Southeast Asia relative to, obviously, the staggering human toll. So we'll have that conversation and touch on other topics when Terry Wolf joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you again one more time of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, some event, benefit you might be involved with or aware of that we should know about that's animal related. Observations, of course, any news stories you might have spotted that you might not be aware of. Want to call to our attention? All of that would be most welcome. The phone number is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, and sometimes, including today, international animals. Stories of note seem important to spotlight, then you'd like to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, having said that, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's jump right in with a local story, but I think it has broader both appeal, if not implications. It's all about old Bob. Who's old Bob, you might be asking? Well, stay tuned. For years, fishermen traded tall tales from about the beast who lived at the bottom of the lake. He was huge. Those who had seen him agreed, pulling ducks underwater and stealing fish from reel lines. Old Bob, the giant alligator snapping turtle of Fullerton's Laguna Lake, was the stuff of legend. In September, workers dredging the lake as part of a restoration project found truth in the rumors as they netted the 4-foot-long, 100-pound turtle. But as quickly as Old Bob surfaced, he disappeared again. Old Bob is hiding out. This is among the reasons I wanted to include this today. Old Bob is hiding out at an undisclosed location in Orange County. His whereabouts a closely guarded secret. Only the highest-ranking officers of the local California Turtle and Tortoise Club know how to find him. And that's how it's going to stay. Quote, he's in a secure, lockdown location, said Sharon Paquette, vice president of the club's Brea-based Orange County chapter. caught in limbo, like a traveler without a passport. Old Bob is sitting tight until his handlers obtain the state permits they need to keep him. Quote, we're just hoping that somebody will come through that can obtain the proper permits. We would like to keep him in Orange County, Paquette said. Alligator snapping turtles are native to the southeastern U.S., but like most non-native species, they are illegal to have in California without the proper state permits. Paquette, who kept Old Bob in her backyard until an appropriate pond was found for him, suspects that the turtle was a pet that got too big to handle and was released into the wild. In the wild, alligator snapping turtles can weigh up to 250 pounds and live to 100. Paquette estimated that Old Bob is 40 years old and still growing. When last heard from publicly, Old Bob... I just love some of these phrases. When last heard from publicly, Old Bob was going to be flown to a preserve in Virginia, but Paquette and others charged with his care worried that he wouldn't be able to adjust to freezing temperatures and light frost. And it goes on from there. So, anyways, they're all keeping mum until the permits come through, and then I guess Old Bob's location will be revealed, especially if it enables him to stay in good old Orange County. Now, a lot less whimsical story. Front page of the LA Times yesterday. Headline, Grizzlies Losing Ground Around Yellowstone. Read a bit of that as well. It's a dateline from Cody, Wyoming. On April 12th of last year, state game and fish officers shot dead a dangerous nuisance known as Bear Number G92 after the grizzly repeatedly broke into buildings searching for food on a ranch here. The 5-year-old male was the first of 19 grizzly bears to die in the region surrounding Yellowstone National Park and one of 50 killed in the lower 48 states, making 2004 the worst year for grizzly mortality since the animal was added to the endangered species list in 1975. The death rate in Yellowstone, where the grizzly population is estimated at 600, was 2.5 times higher than the 15-year average. Most worrying to wildlife biologists was the fact that females made up 60% of the dead. Nonetheless, here's the important part, perhaps. Nonetheless, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is preparing to remove Yellowstone's grizzly bears from the endangered species list this year. Moreover, new management plans may allow hunting of the bears outside the park. The Yellowstone continues the largest of a handful of grizzly populations in the contiguous state and the only one facing imminent removal from the endangered species list. The range encompasses Yellowstone, Grand Teton National Park, and nearby lands in Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho. The law protects the bears in Yellowstone, part of Grand Teton, and in a circle of land outside known as the, quote, primary recovery area. A formidable symbol of American wilderness and a hugely popular public attraction in Yellowstone, the grizzly bear would be the biggest animal to come off the endangered species list since the California gray whale was delisted in 1994. Despite the record number of dead bears last year, the Fish and Wildlife Service contends that grizzlies, whose population has more than doubled in the 3 decades it has been on the list, no longer needs the special protection afforded by the law. Were victims, quote, this is a quote from Chris Servine, Fish and Wildlife Grizzly Bear Coordinator, were victims of our own success. The bears are expanding numbers in their range. They are now in places they haven't been in 80 or 100 years. These mortality rates are to be expected when bears punch into areas where there are more people. So, your thoughts, comments? Never good when somebody pulls endangered species off that list, even with those kind of statistics. But your thoughts, your comments, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And here's something a little more upbeat and sort of ties into what we'll be chatting about momentarily when Terry Wolf from My Country Safari joined us in terms of looking at the situation with the animals in the wake of the tsunami. But here again is an upbeat side to that story. You may have heard about this. A baby hippo rescued after floods in Kenya caused by the tsunami in the Indian Ocean has befriended a 100-year-old tortoise in a zoo. The 1-year-old hippo calf, whose keepers have called Owen, was found alone and dehydrated by wildlife rangers near the ocean. He was put in a wildlife enclosure near Mombasa and soon became pals with a tortoise, who was similar color. Park officials say they sleep and eat together and have become inseparable. Pauline Kimoto from the park said, since Owen arrived on December 27th, the tortoise behaves like a mother to it. The hippo follows the tortoise around and licks his face. Park plans to place Owen with Cleo, a lonely female hippo, when he gets bigger. So, kind of a nice tale based on some of the other stories coming directly or indirectly from that All right, time now for our mid or past mid, perhaps, news quiz question. I think you know how this works, but let's quickly review. It's a true-false question. First person who calls in with the correct answer gets their choice of prizes, which include now, we just got some cool Talking Animals merch, as we like to call it, in the rock and roll world. And including Talking Animals t-shirts, Talking Animals sweatshirts, Talking Animals coffee mugs. So those are among your choice of prizes. Also, we have the fairly new Triumph, the Insult Comic Dog DVD. And again, Triumph CD was recently nominated for a Grammy for Best Comedy Album. And we've got books ranging from Meatless Meals for Working People to the Shirley MacLaine book, which I've noted a few times now. It was co-written by her dog, which is why it's a possible prize here on Talking Animals. And we've got CDs, and we've got other T-shirts, not just Talking Animals ones, but from various animals organizations, including one from Paws, really cool black shirt, Animals Don't Belong in Circuses. And we've got cat toys and dog collars and cool animal-related necklaces and a bunch of other stuff. So the point is, if you are the first to call in with the correct answer now on this quiz question, and or later, towards the end of the show, when we play Name That Animal Tune, you will have your choice of these prizes. Not bad. All right. So, again, true false. Call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, and you could have your choice of those very prizes. All right, so here we go. True or false, a single small brown bat can catch 600 mosquitoes in 1 hour. True or false? A single small brown bat can catch 600 mosquitoes in 1 hour. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. Continuing with our news items a little bit, and then into the comedy corner, and then our guest, Terry Wolf, will join us. News from Canada. Specifically, this is from Ottawa. Federal officials say cattle infected with bovine spongiform encephalopathy, known as mad cow disease, may have been eaten by humans, but stressed the chance of contracting a potentially fatal illness is extremely low. The U.S. banned imports of live Canadian cattle 19 months ago. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency said Friday that it's tracking 141 cattle from the Alberta farm that raised Canada's second confirmed case of BSE. Some of these cows may have made it into animal or human food, said an agency spokesman, Gary Little. Quote, at least a small number of them have been slaughtered and have entered the human food system potentially, Little told a news conference in Ottawa. He and other officials downplayed the risk to consumers, even though BSE can cause the human disease of Creutzfeldt-Jakob, that killed at least 40 people in Britain in the 1990s. Both Little and Paul Mayers of Health Canada's Food Directorate repeatedly said the risk of an animal carried that an animal carried the infection into the human food chain is, quote, very low. We can't say that that would be a zero risk event because zero risk doesn't exist. So Mayers Little said investigators from his agency have quarantined 9 dairy cattle born on the farm a year before and a year after the infected animal was delivered in October 1996. They plan to begin killing and testing the animals for BSE next week. And this one's not hot off the presses, exactly, but I wanted to get to it last week after returning from a couple of weeks' hiatus, and didn't get to it, but quickly got to acknowledge this in some way. A Texas woman who said she paid $50,000 to a Northern California biotech company received an 8-week-old clone of her dead cat, Nikki, the first known sale of a clone pet. Genetic Savings and Clone Incorporated, based in Sausalito, handed over Little Nikki, a Maine Coon cat, this month at a company holiday party in San Francisco. He is identical, she said. I have not been able to see one difference. And this woman, by the way, did not want to be identified beyond her first name, Julie. The company has been working for more than 4 years on the cat cloning process. Its founder, Arizona billionaire John Sperling, funded the research at Texas A&M University that led to the 2001 cloning of the first cat, CC, or carbon copy. Company spokesman Ben Carlson said four other people held cats on order at $50,000 each. He said the clones were expected to be ready by spring. The announcement of Little Nicky sparked criticism from some animal protection groups who saw the event as opening the door to new problems. Quote, there are millions of cats being killed in shelters every year, said Michael Mountain, president of Best Friends Animal Society. There is no shortage of cats, so why do they have to do this? Mountain described the cloning of animals, still a complex procedure that can result in deformities and genetic abnormalities, as an inhumane game of trial and error. Quote, you're dealing with a Dr. Frankenstein situation. Lou Hawthorne, chief executive of Genetic Savings and Clones, said there was no denying the desire of some pet owners to bring back their diseased companions. Quote, we're not curing cancer, but believe we are adding to the sum of joy in the world, Hawthorne said. Dr. Michael Gordon, the psychiatrist and director of medical ethics at Boston University School of Medicine and Public Health, said he saw no ethical problem with the procedure. Many people have a better and stronger and more humane relationship with their pets than they do with other human beings, he said. Who am I to say that somebody shouldn't clone their cats? Your thoughts, your comments, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And that might do it for now. If we may have time, maybe we'll come back to some other things later on in the show. Of course, if there are ever any news stories or announcements or events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I'd also love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, animal comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, yeah, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net. And sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about every single show, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site again. It's talkinganimals.net. It's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner now, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Mitch Hedberg with part of a piece called Smacky the Frog on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
When we're on acid, we're going to the woods, because when you're in the woods tripping, there's less likely a chance you run into an authority figure. But we ran into a bear. That was even more of a buzz kill. My friend Dwayne was standing there raising his right hand, swearing to help prevent forest fire. I got away from the bear, put his arm around my shoulder. He said, Mitchell, Smokey is way more intense in person. He's an asshole. I went to England to tell jokes. I wanted to do Smokey the Bear joke in England, so I had to ask the English if they know who Smokey the Bear was, but they don't. Because in England, Smokey the Bear is not the forest fire prevention representative. They have Smacky the Frog. It's just like a bear, but it's a frog. I think that's a better system. I think we should adopt it. Because bears can be mean, but frogs are always cool. Like, never has there been a frog hopping toward me, and I thought, man, I better play dead. Here comes that frog. I've never said, here comes that frog in a nervous manner. It's always like optimistic. Hey, here comes that frog. All right. Maybe he will settle near me, and I can pet him. And put him in a mayonnaise jar with a stick and a leaf to recreate what he's used to. I certainly have to punch some holes in the lid because he's damn sure used to air. Then I can observe him and he won't be doing much in his 16-ounce world.
Thank you.
All right, that was Mitch Hedberg on today's Comedy Corner with part of a piece called Smacky the Frog, taken from his album Strategic Grill Locations. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals at KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. Many of you know, excuse me, we also stream live on the internet, KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you perhaps arrived through our swell website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Okay, while we get today's guest, Terry Wolf, on the phone with us, this is as good a time as any to hear an animal, Tim. This is a piece of film music by Angelo Badalamenti from Lost Highway, called Red Bats with Teeth. Talk Animals here. KUCI. All right, well, we found Terry. We found Terry. Thank God. Took us, unfortunately, a good 10 minutes of our allotted time here, but we got him, which is the good news. So earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is indeed Terry Wolf, Wildlife Director of Lion Country Safari in West Palm Beach, Florida, who will address kind of how sensitive animals and other elephants, I should say, and other animals are to changes in weather pressure prior to natural disasters, using or drawing from his experiences with animals during the spate of recent Florida hurricanes, and to comment on how really so few animals, relatively speaking, ended up killed or harmed in the wake of the tsunami in Southeast Asia. So touch on other things as time permits as well. So let's remind you all of the phone number in case you want to join us, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, as we welcome Terry Wolf to Talking Animals. Are you there, Terry?
Yes, how are you today?
Cool,
Duncan?
Very good. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals. And, gosh, there's just so much ground I want to cover on this whole topic of how sensitive animals are to changes in weather and other conditions, whether it's the string of hurricanes that you obviously dealt with there or the tsunami in Southeast Asia. But before we do, let's maybe delve into those things. Let's get a bit of intro and establish some context. So maybe you could just kind of give us the nickel tour of Lion Country Safari, a little bit about it, and maybe a little bit about your background as well.
Sure. Well, Lion Country Safari is a drive-through zoo. In fact, we used to have a lion country in Irvine.
I know. I was going to talk to you about that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of an area where we put people in cages. They're in their car as they drive through, and the animals have these large areas to roam free, more or less free in. And I've worked for Lion Country since about 1970.
Wow.
In particular, I have a lot of strength in a lot of experience with elephants and chimps and some of the more dangerous stuff, as well as the lions. But I've worked with about 40 different elephants in my career, and they're fascinating creatures. They are very intuitive, and I've learned as much from them over the years, I'm sure, as about any animal here.
Sure. And how many elephants currently reside at Lion Country Safari?
Currently, we have four. They're African elephants. Mm-hmm. We have three females and one bull. The bull was actually born here, and he's the oldest living captive-born bull elephant in the world, which shows a lot for the kind of environment that we have down here. It's a very healthy, a good environment. The females have helped raise them. I didn't do it by myself. They really did
right.
It all.
Sure. And how old is that bull, Terry? I guess I'd be remiss in not asking how old that guy is.
He's 23 years old now.
Okay.
And he'll be 24 in March.
All right.
And he is now currently one of the bigger participants in the reproductive program for African elephants, and that we do collect sperm off of him and kind of ship it around the country whenever there's an African elephant that is cycling and the zoo wants to try and have babies. It's a lot easier to do an artificial insemination than it is to try and ship Bawagi to another zoo.
I would think, yeah.
And Bawagi's the name of our bull elephant. But, this is working out pretty well. And he just recently, almost a year and a half ago, sired a little bull named Louie at the Toledo, Ohio Zoo.
Wow.
So
cool.
He's doing a great job for that reproductive program, and we're learning a lot with a lot of different research programs with him, too.
That's very cool. Well, I just want to quickly remind our listeners again, this is Talking Animals in 80.9 FM, KUCI, and we're speaking with Terry Wolf, the Wildlife Director of Florida's Lion Country Safari. And what we're going to do right now probably, is sort of just have Terry, if you will, just kind of draw on your experiences with the hurricanes and what all happened and how that affected the animals and what they sensed, and maybe
right.
kind of extrapolate a little bit from there to what went on in Southeast Asia. So anyone who wants to join the conversation and have a question for Terry, it's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So first of all, like maybe just if you could talk to us a little bit about the behavior of the animals that were in your care during one or more of the hurricanes, and again, relate it wherever possible to at least the likely scenario
right.
in Southeast
right.
Asia.
That all the animals are sensitive to any type of change, especially in the weather. But the elephants and our antelope were probably the most attuned to it. During the storm, the antelope behavior changed dramatically. And, instead of kind of being a widely spread out herd, they became a very tight-knit group. And during the storm, they moved around more like a school of fish, kind of shoulder to shoulder to each other, and kind of forgot their personal differences if they had any, and really kind of stuck with each other through thick and thin. Huh. And they're large areas that we have, and we don't really pen them up anywhere because that way they have a choice to go where they need to go in the section to get more shelter and get out of the wind as the wind shifts. All the storms that we had here, the hurricanes, each one had a different personality. The Francis was a storm that just wouldn't go away. It just went on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And it really did have an effect on the animals toward the end in that they were just basically all exhausted. And pretty much, you know, when the sun did finally come out, everybody just kind of crashed and took a nap all at the same time and laid back. We did not suffer any casualties throughout either one of the storms.
Wow.
In fact, we had a kudu, which is a large African antelope that was born just prior to Francis. I did have to rescue that kudu from a large body of water that developed in its pen after about 12 hours of drenching rain.
Sure.
But I set it up on the concrete and where it was dry and sheltered, and the mother came to it. We supplemented its for a couple of days with a bottle to give it strength. Of course, now his name is Francis, and he's doing real well.
Sure.
During the second storm, Irene was a totally different storm. Came through very rapidly, but the winds were a lot more difficult, a lot stronger. We did have an antelope called an impala that was born right in the middle of Irene, and just kind of really. This animal, I don't think, knew that there was anything wrong and was bouncing around like a normal antelope, but right in the 60-mile-an-hour winds.
Well, so, didn't have any much to compare with, probably.
No, didn't have anything to compare with.
Yeah.
But the elephants during Francis literally were nonstop eaters, and a lot of that, I think, had to do with nerves.
Hmm.
They just ate and ate and ate and ate.
And how far, if I could ask Terry, like what the elephants you're describing now, or even some of the other animals, I mean, how far in advance of the hurricane actually, you know, hitting, or at least getting at its most powerful, did you detect kind of differences in their behavior?
Almost immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, we go through a preparation when we go under what's called a hurricane warning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're already prepared during a hurricane watch, but as soon as it hits a warning, then we start going into a radical mode where we catch up all the birds, all the primates, and put them in smaller cages and put them in buildings where they'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
The elephants come into their night house,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of just keep them safely away inside there. That same with the rhino and the lions.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't hesitate to come inside. They were very cooperative, even though it was the middle of the day. They're not used to coming in the middle of the day. And you could tell from their disposition that they were a little nervous, but not aggressively
mm-hmm.
nervous. It was more of a...
They just knew something was up, kind of.
Right,
like.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of rumbling and a little talking. Elephants are very vocal. One of the interesting sidelines to the tsunami, I just got an email from one of my elephant buddies where apparently there's a mahout over there that had his elephants, and mahouts are Indian men that work elephants for a living.
Yeah.
Over there, they work the forests, and they're like lumberjacks. The elephants are their bulldozers and their tractors, and they're doing a lot of work over there now. But right before the tsunami, they had his elephants chained up, and they do that just to keep them from going in their neighbor's farms. It's
mm-hmm.
not a cruel thing. It's more like, you know, keeping them in his yard so they wouldn't go and tear down somebody else's house.
Sure.
It was a kind of their day off. And prior to this, way prior to the arrival of the wave, these elephants started crying and literally tore their restraints out of the ground and took off running. And he took off running after them. And he later said that if he hadn't chased these elephants, and he literally had to chase them for miles inland, that the wave would have drowned him. And he was
wow.
saved just by, because he followed his elephants inland. So these elephants, they hear sound waves that are very low in frequency.
Mm-hmm.
It's called infrasound. And they communicate with each other with these vocalizations that we can't hear, but they're very low rumblings, and we can, you know, if we have a cold and we're standing next to them when we're working them and they do these vocalizations, you can actually feel the vibrations in your chest. You can't hear anything.
Yeah.
But you feel this very strange feeling in your chest.
It's like vibrations, like heavy vibrations.
Heavy vibrations. Yeah. I mean, it's like you're at a rock concert, but you can't hear anything going on, you know.
Wow, okay.
Now, an earthquake, especially something of the magnitude of a 9 like this was caused by the tsunami.
Yeah.
Creates huge volumes of infrasound that the elephants surely were able to pick up, and they pick them up in a couple different ways. They can usually hear them. That we think a lot of research still has to be done this way, but a lot of scientists now are beginning to believe that they actually pick up most of the vibrations in their feet. And because elephants, you know, it's no joke, they really have a lot of contact with the ground. You know, when you weigh 10,000 pounds and your feet are almost 20 inches in diameter, there's a lot of surface area on the ground and you're literally pressed into the ground. So any vibrations like that that are carried through the ground, much like sonar that whales make that go through the water, would be picked up by the elephant's feet. And they would have more than likely felt this ground tremor that caused a tsunami, and literally having no experience with anything like it, it's something that scared them. Just like any other wild animal or any animal in particular, if something new happens, it generally doesn't invoke curiosity like funny primates that we are, but it's a fear, and the first thing they would do would be to run for cover. And cover to them means to get as deep into the forest as you can. And that's what they do. I mean, we're really the only crazy animal that lives on the beach. Everybody else kind of stays away from the beach.
Right.
They might visit it, but they don't hang out there.
Right.
And but a lot of these coastal towns where these, what's particularly this mahout lived, this was something that the elephants felt, and they probably, and who knows, they might have even felt the vibrations of this wave, this huge wave, coming towards them, and literally tried to get away from it as best they could. And there's literally no reports that I've seen, other than animals that were in zoos or kind of trapped in a cage or something over there, you know, a park or something, that they were killed by this wave.
Yeah,
they all somehow knew something was going on. Now, a lot of smaller animals, although they may not hear the infrasound that the elephant, they pay attention to other animals. And if the elephants are taken off and running into the forest, you can bet a lot of these other animals are going to say, you know, I'm going with them.
Yeah, so, I don't know what's up, but I'm
going
with
that guy. I
don't know what's
up, but these big guys are scared.
They seem to know something.
Too.
Hey, Terry, looks like we might have a call. Would you like to take a call from one of our listeners?
No problem.
Great. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Terry Wolf.
Hi there, Mr. Wolf. Really enjoy Lion Country Safari. I think it's a really cool place.
Thank you.
Would you say that elephants are like the most sensitive of all the creatures?
I think on a scale of things, I would rate them right up there with dolphins and whales. They're very intelligent. They're very intuitive. They're also very social. Those things are kind of mixed with a different kind of intelligence than you or I have, but they're very intelligent about their environment. They're very intuitive about each other. So I'd rank them right up there with dolphins and whales.
And if I could, then, to sort of hook together the caller's question with what you were just saying, Terry, then it sounds like, really, again, most likely, well, you weren't there, but, I mean, it sounds like the scenario that you can kind of imagine is that when anybody got wind in the animal world of the tsunami, it was probably the elephants first.
I would believe that would be true, because just because of their perception and of this infrasound and the vibrations of the earth and the things like that. Not to diminish anything that the buffalo might have felt or anything else. I mean, we're really just on the edge of research when it comes to animal communication.
Yeah.
And especially with this elephant, the infrasound communication. I mean, literally, this was just discovered within the last decade, and it's something that they're just now doing experiments with elephants in the wild in Africa. They've been doing experiments with the elephants up in Georgia at the Atlanta Zoo through the university up there. And it's one of those things that scientists can't get a lot of funding for, but maybe now with the tsunami and all the kind of indication that these animals had a perception of this sort of thing, maybe there'll be some more funds that'll go towards this sort of research where we can kind of use them as a listening device.
Sure.
You know, who knows? And then they have a lot of other things to teach us. That's not it. I mean, animals have survived on this planet a lot longer than us, and we really, I'd learn something from the animals here every day. So it's, I think it's an important resource.
Well, and again, as you kind of touched on before, I mean, I don't think we've read much contrary to this. I mean, it seems like somehow few, if any, animals were killed or even harmed there when obviously the human toll is of course, just staggering and just continues to escalate. So, and one, I guess, difference from kind of, you know, while asking you to draw on kind of what happened at your facility with the hurricanes, but, I mean, it seems like, you know, humans and animals got some warning or typically get some warning when it's something like a hurricane. But if I understand the way the tsunami works, I mean, it's moments or less. And yet the animal still somehow recognized and responded fast enough to protect himself.
Right. And it's, you know, it's just they're remarkable in all their traits, elephants are.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other things about them that, you know, might have something to do with this is that they're great swimmers.
Yeah.
You know, they're not really afraid of water. So something like a wave that's coming at them isn't what terrified them. I'm pretty certain, though, that the sound that it made really got to them and told them that this was not just a normal wave and normal water. This was something that was really destructive and something so new to them that they knew that they had to get away from it and seek shelter.
Yeah. And yeah, because it seems like elephants, you know, not only are more attuned, as you're kind of suggesting here, but, I mean, they can run, they can swim, so they may have been uniquely capable of both reacting and surviving. Although, again, we still haven't really heard any reports of other animals that, you know, suffer.
Even the buffalo and the orangutans and the different primates that live in this part of the world, I haven't heard any reports of problems anywhere.
Yeah. And Terry, would you say, based on your experience, I mean, how much of what tipped off the elephants and other animals about the tsunami was their kind of innate ability to sense it or to sense something was coming versus some form of message, you know, that one member of that species, maybe elephant to elephant, or somehow if they were picking up, you know, other animals or other species were picking up messages from other...
Good question. I think that animals, because they are more... attuned to their environment, which includes all the other species that live with them, really pay more attention.
Yeah.
We are kind of insulated from our environment. We've kind of lost the wild edge, if you would. You know, we really don't have the perception that our forefathers or ancestors had when they literally were gatherers and hunters and really depended on the environment. I think we kind of take it for granted.
Yeah.
And, we don't really listen. And it's a shame that we lose that touch with it, but the animals themselves, that's how they survive. That's how they survive day to day.
Yeah.
That's how they avoid predators. I mean, a lot of animals may not be able to perceive that they're being hunted by a leopard until another animal tips them off to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's that's how they survive, by paying attention to these other animals, paying attention to what's going on, listening to the, you know, the winds and the rains, and paying attention to the weather. It's a, you know, we've kind of lost touch with our primeval soul here, I think.
Sure. And it sounds like there's cues all the time, if I follow you, and but people are paying way more attention if it's a more frantic or pronounced cue that hey, there's something bad coming. Terry, we're just about at the end of our time, but we might have one more quick call from a listener if you're up for that. Okay, hi, you're on the. Oh, all right, too bad. Well, Terry, I really appreciate you making the time to speak with us on Talking Animals. I think this is really fascinating, and I would, you know, could easily talk more about it and sort of ask you more about it. But and maybe another time we will. But I want to thank you for making the time for us and remind everybody you're the wildlife director at Lion Country Safari in sort of broad strokes, West Palm Beach, Florida. And
you're welcome very much, Duncan. And it's a pleasure talking to you. And any time. You just give me a call.
Absolutely. All right, Terry. Well, thank you so much, and you know, have a good rest of the day over there at the park.
I will. I'm going out and talk to some animals right now.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks so much.
Take care, Doug.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Okay, that was Terry Wolf one more time from Lion Country Safari. And if you want to find out more about him or what they do or some of the other programs, it's, the website, of course, is lioncountrysafari.com. And I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and everyone, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time to play Name That Animal Tune. And again, like pretty much any other version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except this game, the tunes are always animal related. So without any further ado, if you can recognize this animal tune and you're the first one to call in at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, then you will have your choice of those prizes that we mentioned earlier. So, can you name this animal tune? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI. Remember these guys? And then they're back, so I thought, why not? I don't know that I can make it too much easier. I mean, the title is the answer, sort of. Anyway, I'm Duncan Strauss. We've just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, the University of California Board of Regents. I want to again thank our guest Terry Wolf for joining us on Talking Animals. One more time, he's with Lion Country Safari, the wildlife director there, in fact. And the website is lioncountrysafari.com. I also want to thank you all for listening and for the phone call we received. Hope you join us next Monday, January 17th, when our guest will be Dr. Jennifer Conrad, director of the PAW Project, which seeks to educate the public about the often crippling effects of feline declawing, and actually spearheaded the effort to pass California's brand new law that bans declawing of wild and exotic cats. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just today alone the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. I want to urge you again to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list. We're going to alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. I also encourage you to email me with comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. Really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned, of course, for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. His great, great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. This is a cover version of Kate Bush's Hounds of Love, brand new by the Future Hits here on KUCI.
When I was a child, running in the night, I was afraid.